Right, let's try that again, shall we?
Yes. Hello and welcome to the Europeans podcast, a podcast about the continent of Europe.
Why so down?
Yeah, so there's a bi-weekly concert from the Church Bells that you'll hear me complain about all the time. And today's was 45 minutes long, which is why we're trying to record again now, because I had to enjoy them slaughtering Bohemian Rhapsody and Imagine and a lot of Dutch classics.
Is that supposed to be like a morale-boosting thing?
I think it probably is, and it's actually really nice. And for lots of people, it's probably, well, for all of us, it's the only concert we're going to get in a very long time, so I shouldn't complain about it. But it is very difficult to escape from that noise.
I feel like they should have done some sort of survey to find out whether people actually wanted it to happen first.
I think so too.
Oh dear. Anyway, how are you other than the church bells?
I am fine. And I'm excited to read that soon we might be able to visit each other within 90 minutes because they're thinking of creating a magnetic hover train between Amsterdam and Paris.
Yes. I do wonder whether the quarantine will have been lifted before that. I mean, this thing could take, what, 50 years? So I hope so. I wonder if we'll still be making this podcast by the time it's up and running.
We're going to be making this podcast forever, Katie.
Yay!
For those people who might be new listening, should we explain what this podcast is? Because we haven't done that for a while.
Yeah, this is a podcast about Europe. It's quite self-explanatory, really. But every week we try and talk about a couple of the sort of big things happening in Europe that you might have missed. And it's quite easy to miss them at the moment because obviously there's only one story in town. So we're doing our best to sort of delve into stuff that isn't getting talked about as much.
Yeah, we started this podcast not mentioning the B word being Brexit, if that's not obvious. And now we try as much as possible not to mention the C word because everyone is hearing so much of that at the moment. And yeah, you don't need to hear us nattering on about it. So we're trying to cover the things that you might otherwise not have heard. I'm Dominic. I'm an opera singer based in Amsterdam, and we record this over Skype, which is very convenient. So we haven't had to change the way we're doing this at all. And yeah, I'm speaking to Katie Lee. You're my journalist friend who's usually based in Paris, but currently holed up in London.
And very nice it is too. We've got a balcony here, so I'm feeling
smug.
Very smug to be here with my balcony. Well, the other thing is that I had a big argument with my neighbour in Paris before I left, so I figured if I was going to be holed up somewhere for months on end, this was probably the place to do it.
Which was genuinely one of the reasons why you left, wasn't it?
Yeah. Let's hope he's not listening to this podcast. Anyway, what are we talking about this week?
Well, this week I prepared something Polish for our occasional segment, Commemoration Corner. But then when I was preparing it, I realized that there's actually a lot going on in Poland right now, including an upcoming presidential election and various battles between the European courts and the Polish government. So we thought it was a good time to check in with our favorite Polish journalist, Ania Jakubek, who you've heard from a few times before, talking about Polish bears and Frida Kahlo in Poland. But we'll be speaking to her a bit later on in the show.
But before that, it's Good Week, Bad Week.
Good week. Bad week.
Who's had a bad week, Dominic?
As they say on the Great British Bake Off, I've got the unenviable job of handing out bad week. And I'm going to give it to nature this week. I'm sorry, nature, but there are reasons aplenty as to why you deserve this. First, there was the news that I read soon after last week's episode went out that scientists have noticed increasing activity in the volcanic peninsula of Reykjanes in Iceland. This is a volcanic region whose last active period started in the 10th century and then went on for 300 years.
What? So it was like spewing stuff out for 300 years?
Yeah, on and off.
And so what? They think it's going to come back again?
Yeah, they think it because there have been 8,000 earthquakes measured in the region since the beginning of 2020 and an uplift inland of about 10 centimetres.
Okay. You know how we keep getting messages about how soothing people are finding this podcast in these difficult times?
Yeah.
I feel like you're kind of veering off target here.
Oh, just wait what I've got coming up. So you may have noticed I didn't say volcano, I said volcanic region, because it's not just one single volcano. In fact, they think it's an area that contains 5 volcanic systems, and they expect to experience eruptions roughly every 1,000 years. So the last eruption was 800 years ago, and therefore it would only be a little bit ahead of schedule. unlike some of the other Icelandic volcanoes which flare up for a few years and then die down, once this region is active, they think it could be expected to flare up and down for a few centuries. And alarmingly, the area is pretty close to some key places. The town of Grindavik, the Blue Lagoon, which is Iceland's most popular tourist attraction. And also, it's pretty close to Iceland's international airport and not far from Reykjavik itself, Iceland's capital. So it's not ideal, but the country of Iceland is used to volcanic activity and there are very clever people monitoring it very closely. So I don't think anyone's in any immediate danger. So that was number one for Nature's Bad Week. Here's number two, and get ready for a really sad tale.
Great.
We are all focused on a certain virus and little else, but one community in Germany are pretty stressed by another mystery illness that is wreaking havoc through their natural environment. I'm talking about the German blue tit community. Humans living in the German regions of Thuringia and Rhineland-Palatinate recently started to notice dying blue tits appearing in their garden. Isn't that horrifying? People have been seeing the birds before they die with fluffed up feathers and a strange, like, unawareness of the humans around them. And they seem to die soon after appearing in this rather disturbing state. Worryingly, it seems like it's a highly contagious disease because sometimes up to 5 dead birds are found in one garden. Whilst this disease has currently only been reported in Germany, it seems realistic that it will sadly spread. Thanks, nature. Anyway, Germans have been asked to report sick or dead birds sighted in their gardens to the conservation group NABU or NABU so that they can better assess the disease. Those two reasons alone would definitely be enough for Nature's Bad Week, but I've got a third one to top it off and it's...
I don't need it. I'm bummed out enough. Can we just skip it?
No, you can't. It's important.
Fine, what is it?
Radiation levels at and surrounding Chernobyl have risen due to huge forest fires in the area.
Great.
I don't find this funny, but... It is ridiculous. What's happening 2020? Apparently, forest fires aren't that unusual in the so-called zone of alienation around the abandoned Chernobyl nuclear plant. But due to the warm and dry winter, they have been proving harder to control this year. And as you may have guessed, forest fires aren't good in an area where there are high levels of radiation. Whilst much of the radiation from the Chernobyl disaster has over the years sunk into the earth, the plants that grow in this soil bring the radiation back up above the ground. And once those plants then burn in forest fires, the radiation is once again released into the atmosphere. I hope I got that right, scientists. At least mainly right. And it's predicted that winds were going to blow some of that smoke towards the Ukrainian capital, Kiev. But for now, authorities are appealing for calm and officials think that the increase in radiation will be way, way below levels deemed dangerous. So let's hope that stays the case. We're recording on Tuesday afternoon and there were some pretty terrifying reports this morning from Greenpeace that the fire was actually much closer to the power plant itself than the authorities had been letting on. And there is still scant information, but at the time of recording, the latest report suggests that some rain has helped extinguish a lot of the flames. And we've just heard from the state emergency services that there are no more open flames, only slight smouldering in the forest. But this is a fast-moving story, so by the time you hear this, things may have changed. I guess we can thank nature for the rain. And maybe it's not really fair blaming nature for this one, seeing as the Chernobyl plant was a human project. And it is believed that the fire was started by some farmers nearby who were burning some stubble to clear nearby fields.
Oh, so very much human cause then, on all fronts.
Very much bad, weak humans as well. But looking at these three stories as a whole, I think I feel comfortable giving bad week to nature.
Well, I'm going to see your bad week for nature and I'm going to throw it right back in your face and say it's been a good week for nature.
Okay, hit me. Why?
It's been a good week for nature because of mutant bacterial enzymes, which might not sound like a good thing, but in this case, I really think it is. Before I explain, I just want to apologise to all the chemists out there because I'm about to horribly oversimplify some chemical processes. But basically, some French scientists have managed to engineer an enzyme that breaks down plastic incredibly quickly so that it's like ready to be recycled within hours. And that's very exciting, and it means we might be able to clean up all the crap in the sea a lot faster.
Good. My blood pressure is starting to decrease with this news.
Sit back and relax, Dominic. I'm going to tell you about the enzyme.
Great.
The other nice thing about it is that the enzyme that the scientists are using for this was originally found in a compost heap full of rotting leaves. And I don't know, I just think there's something really nice about the idea that brilliant things can be found in very boring and overlooked places.
Oh, it's like the apple falling and learning about gravity.
Which incidentally happened while Newton had been sent home on quarantine because of the plague.
Oh, really? And also, I heard recently that Shakespeare wrote two of his greatest plays during quarantine from the plague. I can't remember which ones.
There's something to make us feel unproductive.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to my enzyme. The research about it was published last week in the scientific journal Nature. It's a French team mostly based at the University of Toulouse. And basically what they did was they knew there were lots of microbes that are pretty good at breaking down plastic. So they screened 100,000 of them. And it turned out that the best one was this bacteria that came from the compost heap. So they took it and they gave it the kind of Frankenstein treatment to turn it into a like super strength plastic eating bug. And the reason that it's really powerful is that it's really good at breaking down this type of plastic called PET, which is what they use to make lots of like drinks bottles and food packaging. And what the enzyme does is you can take a ton of plastic and in 10 hours you can come back and it would have degraded 90% of the plastic into the type of plastic that's ready to be used in recycled products. So it's pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to work out if it's been overhyped because it is a corporate venture. There's a French company and a Danish company who are going to be trying to produce this enzyme on a big scale over the next 5 years. And they're working with big companies like Pepsi and L'Oreal. So I was kind of a bit wary of drinking the Kool-Aid. But even scientists who didn't work on this project are saying it's really exciting. So it's got some street cred. The plastic that we're left with after the enzyme has done its work is just as strong as normal plastic, and it's apparently easier to change the colour than most of the recycled plastic that we have today.
Which is obviously very important.
Very important. And I know that the answer is probably that we should just be producing less waste in general and thinking more carefully about what we buy and whether we need it. But this is still very good news, I think.
Yeah, and also, as we discussed before when we've talked about plastic a million times, plastic's an amazing thing.
It is useful.
And I think now more than ever, as people are using it as protective equipment as well, it's really important.
It's not necessarily the devil. Also, for a sort of bonus good week for nature point, there were some new figures out this week which suggested that there's going to be a massive drop in carbon emissions this year. 5% globally, according to some research commissioned by the Guardian newspaper, which obviously comes at the cost of a global economic shutdown that is hurting many, many people. But if the planet is like healing a little bit as a consequence of that, I think there's some comfort to be found in it.
Thank you.
Are you feeling better now?
Yes, a little bit. You know what's been making me feel better as well this week is all the lovely support we've got on Patreon.
People are so nice. I'm a bit worried that this podcast is going to end up consisting of us just thanking people for half an hour. Because yet again, loads of people have signed up to support us through these straitened times. And honestly, it makes me quite emotional. So I think we should just rattle through the names of these brilliant people. Are you ready?
Yes.
Thank yous go this week to Christine Rowe, Martina Canessi, Christian Fröschlin, Martine, Andrea Croak, and to Connor Walsh and Alison and Jetty, who were already supporting us but decided this week to increase the amount that they're sending our way. Thank you so much. You are all amazing.
Just in the last hour, we've had this slightly mad idea to join the crowds of everyone else doing pub quizzes and creating a European pub quiz for our Patreon supporters. I don't know if this is anything anyone would actually like to do, but
I feel like it's something that might put people off donating.
That's true. You don't have to do it. But those of you who are supporting us already, let us know if you think this is a good or bad idea and whether you'd like us to do it. And if you would like us to do it, we will do it. If you'd like to join that gang of lovely Patreon supporters, then head to patreon.com/Europeans podcast.
So obviously, there aren't many areas of our lives that haven't changed over the last couple of months. Pretty much everything has been affected. And that includes how we do democracy. Governments everywhere are having to work out how to hold elections, or if to hold them. I know in France, there was a big controversy just before I left, because the government decided to go ahead with the first round of local elections. And the second round of those elections has now been cancelled. And we've seen voting cancelled in a bunch of other countries, from Ethiopia to Bolivia. Close to home in Poland, there's been quite a furious debate over whether the presidential election, which is due to take place on May the 10th, can go ahead. And Dominic and I have actually found ourselves missing talking about politics recently, like real politics, the way we used to. So we thought this week was a good opportunity to check in with our woman in Warsaw, the journalist Ania Jakubek, and just try and figure out what is going on with this election and with Polish politics in general. First of all, Ania, I want to offer my congratulations because you've joined the 21st century and have finally got internet in your apartment.
I did get internet, and I have to say that it's amazing. I would say that my hot tip for today would be that there's this thing called the internet, and it's great.
Great tip. Thank you, Ania. That's very good to know.
Well, we better talk about some serious things now, because we wanted to give you a call mainly because we love talking to you, but also because there's a growing list of things happening in Poland that we wanted to understand better. And who better to explain those things than you? Could we start by talking about the upcoming election in Poland? There is a presidential election planned for May the 10th. Is it definitely going ahead?
Well, that's anyone's guess at this point. And I think it's going to be anyone's guess right up till the 11th hour. There's been growing pressure from the opposition parties, from medical workers, from the public. Actually, according to opinion surveys, the majority of the public wants the election to be postponed. And even members of the governing Conservative Party and their allies have said they think it's worth pushing the election back. But despite all that pressure, the government is sticking to its guns. It still has not postponed this election. And the consensus among observers is that they're sticking to the date because it's the best chance for the president to get reelected. He's the current front runner, and if the election is moved back, then his chances of winning will be lower.
And what's the logic behind that? Like, why does everyone think that pushing ahead with an election now would play into the government's hands and those of the current president, Andrzej Duda?
Well, the current government, a lot of its popularity comes from the generous social benefits that it's been handing out. The most popular one is the 500 plus 500 plus, which was giving out 500 zloty to people with children. So 500 zloty for each kid. And because of the crisis, Poland, like other countries around the world, are experiencing economic troubles. And this is definitely not going to reflect well on the economy in the weeks and months to come. So if we do push back the election, the economy is going to be in a worse state, and that will obviously influence voters' choices. Also, the other thing is right now, I think it's always like that, where when there's a crisis, the country puts more faith into its politicians.
Mm. I mean, even Trump's been getting a bump in the opinion polls, right?
Is he? Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like that in Poland right now, that the president is enjoying popularity. The other thing worth noting about the election is that last week, the parliament, which is controlled by the conservatives, passed legislation making this election a postal vote only election. And that's something that Poland doesn't have experience with. And also, as you probably realize, we don't have a lot of time to make this happen. We have a month in which to get 30 million voters to vote via the postal service. It is less of a health risk than having people go to polling stations to vote, but it's still not totally risk-free. So there have been a lot of people saying that this isn't a great idea either. Even people who support the government, many of them don't want this election to go ahead.
So in the meantime, is there any noticeable campaigning going on?
That's the other thing. It's people have brought that up, that it's not a fair election because there's no chance to campaign. Right now in Poland, the limit on public gatherings is 2 people. So that makes it a little difficult to campaign. And there has been talk that the only person really allowed to campaign right now is the president, because he has to go about his work and speak with the public. The other thing is there's not really a lot of talk about the usual issues.
Could that perhaps be a blessing in disguise in a way? Because if past Polish elections are anything to go by, then often the issues end up being family values and talking about the gay agenda and that kind of thing.
Well, Poland's really conservative, and I think the LGBT issue, like other issues, you know, like abortion, I think those are going to show up either way. Even if they don't come up right now, they're going to come up eventually. The interesting thing about abortion, actually, I was just reading this morning that the parliament wants to discuss tightening the abortion law this week. So it doesn't seem like the pandemic is entirely putting a stop to all these issues.
One thing I wanted to know about was how much some other news has cut through despite this health crisis. In the last week, the European Court of Justice ruled that a politically selected disciplinary panel for judges in Poland that the government had set up must be suspended. And this disciplinary panel was seen by international observers as a threat to Polish democracy. And it was quite big news within European circles, but did anyone actually notice this happening in Poland itself?
Well, the government certainly did. They responded immediately. They said that the decision was a violation of Polish sovereignty and that they would take it up with the Polish Constitutional Court, which critics say is stacked with judges who are allied with the government. So the decision that that court may take is likely to be not a surprise to anyone. So it is kind of this ping-ponging that's going on again, as usual with this issue, where the EU says something, then Poland is like, well, there's a lot of back and forth like that. So the government did notice, and this Association of Judges, Justicja, also noticed. They instead welcomed the verdict. They said that it would stop the government from persecuting judges. In terms of the public, well, there's a segment of the population that's never been interested in this issue because it's abstract and convoluted. I mean, I'm a journalist, and even when there's a new development, we're there in the office tearing our hair out, trying to understand what just happened and how do we explain it to someone in Hong Kong or New Zealand. But then there's the segment of the population that has been following the case closely. And I would venture to guess that those people are still following it, but not as closely as before. Because like I said, I do get the sense that people here are very much focused on the virus and things related to that, like the election. I mean, it's still getting covered. All the local media did cover the verdict. And on social media, I saw this meme. It's like a little video of a printer printing out this verdict and then it falling straight into a shredder. You know, some people have noticed, but I don't think it's getting as many eyeballs as it would otherwise.
And the president who's trying to get reelected, Andrzej Duda, what's the deal with him? Like, how powerful is he? Because I always get the impression that the person actually running the show in Poland is that other guy, Jarosław Kaczyński.
Your impression is totally correct. Kaczyński is indeed the puppet master, the main guy in Polish politics, and has been for a while. And the funny thing about Kaczyński is that he's just a lawmaker. He doesn't have any other position. He's not a cabinet member. He's just a lawmaker and the head of the party. So the president, Andrzej Duda, he used to be a member of the Conservative Party, PiS, and there's a tendency for Polish presidents to resign from their party once they become president, to be independent. He did that, but he's still very close with the governing Conservatives. And there's always been a lot of talk about how he's just a pen or a pencil, because for a long time he would just rubber stamp any decision that was passed on to him. There have been a couple exceptions where he has put his foot down, where he's vetoed something, only to then agree to a similar decision, slightly changed. He's very, very closely allied with the governing Conservatives, but the real power lies with Kaczyński.
And Kaczyński, his brother, his twin brother, I believe, who was president of Poland, died 10 years ago last Friday in this terrible Smolensk air disaster when a plane crashed near the city of Smolensk in Russia and killed everyone on board, including the Polish president, his wife, a former president, military leaders, the head of the Polish bank, and many other political and military officials and advisors. 10 years on from that tragedy, is it still having an effect on Polish politics?
At the very beginning, when it first happened, it united the country. For a few days, the country was united in grief. And then soon enough, it divided the country. And since then, for the last 10 years, it has been a source of division. And the main issue has revolved around the debate over what caused the crash. There's a portion of the population that believes it was an accident, and that's what the investigators have found, that it was a combination of human error and bad weather. But then there's the other side of the country that believes it might not have been an accident. There's those who just say the previous liberal administration was negligent in preparing for the commemoration and also messed up a little on the investigation front. And then there's those who straight up say it was an assassination. So that has really divided the country over the years, and it's also become very politicized, and a lot of people are not happy with that. There were plans to make a big deal out of this anniversary, but of course we have Corona, so it ended up being a scaled back affair. Kaczynski and the prime minister, along with a handful of other senior officials, laid wreaths at the monument to the victims in Warsaw. TV stations were showing the politicians walking over to the monument, and they were definitely not abiding by the social distancing rules. And people were a little upset about that, as they were about the fact that they were just gathering in general, because we have this limit on public gatherings of 2 people right now. There have been people upset about that in the sense that, you know, we've been told to abide by these measures and the politicians themselves aren't abiding by them. So it seems a little unfair. So again, once again, as always, this tragedy that in the very early days united the country, it is dividing the country. And I get the feeling that maybe it will always divide the country.
You know our sort of new informal segment, Isolation Inspiration, Dominic?
Yeah, which I think is not informal. It's very formal.
Well, it's not formal till it's got a jingle.
Oh, that's true. Jim?
Jingle man Jim needs to get on it. Anyway, I would like to suggest as my isolation inspiration this week, Anya's Instagram account, because when Anya is not being a journalist, she's an artist and she does beautiful drawings, which she shares with the world via Instagram. We will post a link in the show notes. Have you got any stuff this week that you want to suggest?
Well, I actually just listened to my first podcast in Dutch. Oh. I know we have quite a lot of listeners in the Netherlands. So if you speak a little bit of Dutch like me, or even if you speak a lot, you might enjoy a podcast about the opera that I was rehearsing just before this shutdown started. It's called Making an Opera. And I mentioned before that there was this podcast lady who was wandering around during all of our rehearsals and sometimes getting in the way in quite comical ways. But she has made a really nice 7-episode series so far. I think there's one more.
Oh my God, it's basically serial.
Yeah, it is. And it's quite fun. Quite a bit of it is in English because a lot of the cast are English like me. So sorry, that's pretty exclusive to the people who speak at least a little bit of Dutch. But if you do, then head to Making an Opera in your podcast player.
My other isolation inspiration this week is actually a bit of a shout out to our friends at Are We Europe magazine, the continent's most beautiful magazine. And my shout out is to them because they're doing home deliveries. So if you're interested in Europe and you like magazines, it's kind of a no-brainer. Get the mag. And actually, we've got a voice memo this week from the magazine's editor, Kirill Hartog, about the next issue.
It's called The Silver Lining, and it will gather stories of solidarity, creativity, and compassion from all over Europe. We need to adapt our journalism and allow the coronavirus crisis to be the catalyst for positive change. So if you want to read stories about the people, places, and politics that are going to make a difference in this crisis, head on over to areweeurope.com. All our content is available for free, but if you'd like to support, you can order a beautiful print magazine now. We promise it'll be delivered. Stay safe, stay healthy, and remember, stay the fuck home.
This week's happy ending comes from West Kerry. It's a story that was reported by RTE, the Irish national broadcaster. They reported that a woman went to her local shop in the parish of Ballyferrita and gave the shop owners 500 euros to buy an Easter egg for every child in the parish.
Aww.
She gave clear instructions and asked for elderly people who are quarantined to be included in this egg giveaway. The parish only contains around 500 people, so there's a lot of speculation as to whom this generous donor is, but she insisted on staying anonymous with her act of selfless kindness. So over the weekend, the shop delivered around 250 Easter eggs around the parish with a volunteer dressed in a corona-proof panda costume. Making
Are we sure that it was corona-proof?
I'm not 100% sure.
I don't think panda costumes count as PPE.
Well, it was basically PPE up to the head, where it was just then a panda head.
Okay.
It was like plastic gloves and a completely plastic outfit with a panda head on top.
Sounds quite scary.
Yeah, it does in some ways. But this panda made the deliveries and brought a little bit of joy to the residents with this unexpected moment of generosity.
That is lovely.
Yeah, thank you, Fintan Brennan, for sending this story to me on Instagram. Good shout. I love reading these happy stories, so keep them coming.
I think a lot of people have been doing Easter egg hunts over the past week or so within their homes just to keep themselves entertained. And actually, our jingle man is one of them. His girlfriend, Suzanne, was hiding eggs all over their room, which I think is very sweet.
One of the things I don't like about living in the Netherlands is that they only do tiny Easter eggs.
Oh.
They don't do any of the big ones that you get in the UK. And I really miss that.
I think you're going to have to move home, Dominic.
This might be the egg that broke the camel's back.
Not a phrase.
Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. But thank you so much for listening again. We'll be back next week. And we actually promised last week that we would have this exciting interview with someone who's Katie's been fangirling for a while.
I know. I just realised that everyone now probably thinks that that's Anya. And obviously, I am a massive fan of our friend Anya. So that is still true.
But she wasn't the celebrity that you were excited to speak to. He's coming next week. We decided it was too important to talk about Poland this week. So check us out in your feeds on Wednesday. In the meantime, come and find us on social media. Where can they find us, Katie?
They can find us on Twitter at EuropeansPod, Instagram at EuropeansPodcast, and the other one, Facebook. If you just type in the Europeans Podcast, you'll find us. We better go and start revising for this quiz that you've apparently decided we're having.
Have I taken something on that I don't know how to do?
Time to swat up. See you next week, everyone.
Toodaloo.
Bye.